Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/bookshow. Then go over to morbidlybeautiful.com as we are now part of the Morbidly Beautiful Podcasting Network.
It's alive!
Everybody here dies by dawn.
Dead by dawn!
Welcome to the Spook Show. Hello and welcome back to the latest edition of the All-American Spook Show podcast. I'm Josh. I'm joined here with Tiana.
Hey.
And the Professor Smoke.
What's up?
Will and Donnie couldn't join us, but unfortunately, because I think this is a pretty good one. Now, you know, of course, I'm saying that because I was the one that selected the movie, but still, I think it's a pretty good one, regardless of whether I picked it or not, right? And we're going to be going for the first time ever here on the Spook Show, proper at least, because we have done it on a couple of YouTube series. But on the podcast proper here, for the first time ever, we're doing a Lucio Fulci movie. And we're going to be talking about City of the Living Dead from 1980, a.k.a. The Gates of Hell, and various other titles that we'll get into here shortly. But I picked this one, you know, mostly because I wanted to get some more Italian horror in on the podcast here, because it's been a minute. But also wanted to get us some Fulci on the podcast proper. So I figured it was a good time to get into it before we get into the summer event. And we will be not necessarily limited to what we can pick, but we have a theme this summer, and we're not quite ready, I should say, to announce that just yet, but just know that, like, you probably won't see too much of this type of stuff during that event. So I figured, like, well, let's get it out of the way now, so we don't have to wait all the way until, like, you know, late August or September to get back to it. But before we dive in, and I'm sure we're all itching to get into this one, we want to toss out the usual information of, we want you to go visit aaspookshow.com. That's the center of the Spook Show universe. From there, you can go to all of our past podcast archives are available there. Also our YouTube channel, where every month we have series, including Grindhouse Gutter, Video Vortex, Hammer Horror in Order, lots of other cool stuff. Plus, the podcast episodes are uploaded there every week, so you don't want to miss that. And from there, you can also go to our Patreon and become a patron. That's also patreon.com/aaspookshow. And every month you get a video mini-sode, which includes the popular series From the Library of the Professor, where he'll pick something from his vast collection and talk about it. And those are always fun every month. And the thing that's a little less fun for us and probably more fun to you to listen to every month that we do over on Patreon is Crapster Piece Theater, where we put up a poll every month of four or five of the shittiest movies we can think of. You, the viewers and listeners, vote on that, and then the following month we have to watch it and talk about it. You can only listen to that by joining our Patreon, patreon.com/aaspookshow. So without any further buildup, we'll go ahead and toss to whatever trailer we can find for City of the Living Dead, a.k.a. The Gates of Hell.
You don't really believe in that stupid Salem witch stuff, do you?
I keep thinking that somebody's out there spying on us.
Turn on the headlights.
Doesn't seem to have been any kind of physical abuse.
What was the cause of her death, then?
Some kind of cardiac arrest. Only that expression on her face looks like something scared her to death.
Are you acquainted with the Book of Enoch? This boundless mortal fear in the face of malice itself. At this very precise moment, in some other distant town, horrendously awful things are happening. Things that would shatter your imagination.
Great. Welcome to the City of the Dead.
The City of the Dead. The Living Dead. The cursed city, where the gates of hell have been opened.
Either I'm going out of my mind, or something very strange is happening.
If those gates are left open, it may be the end of humanity.
God in heaven.
And if the portals of hell don't get shut before, no dead body will ever be able to rest in peace again.
Place of the dead! City of the dead!
Well, Well, there you go. That's the trailer for that. So, Tian, I guess we'll start with you. What's your history with this one? Have you seen this one before?
Yeah, I think this is my third time.
Okay.
Because Brian introduced me to it.
Yeah, I guess we've watched it three times now, I guess, since we've been together. Yeah.
That was probably one of the prerequisites to him asking you to marry him, right? Was like, listen, I want to ask you, but we need to see City of the Living Dead first.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on Lucio Fulci and Italian horror?
Yeah. that was the first date, I assume.
The only Italian horror I really knew was Suspiria until 2014.
Yeah, and so that's around the time you met the master of Italian horror then, right? 2014. Yeah. Yeah, when you met him, then you were introduced to it proper. So with that assumption, Smoke, how many times I'm sure you've seen this more than three, right?
Yeah. The first time was, as we mentioned, I don't know if I said this on the podcast, or maybe I talked about it when we did the Fulci episode on Grindhouse Gutter. I think Dom be on there, but. Like I always call these movies pretty much by what I rented them as on VHS now, and I also joke around that I speak fluent Italian horror titles. not fluent Italian. And this one was Paura nella città dei morti viventi, which translates to Fear in the City of the Living Dead. So I mean, it probably makes more sense that if people are calling it City of the Living Dead now, when it gets released on DVD and Blu-rays, generally that's the title it gets released under, is City of the Living Dead, but. Of course, on VHS in the U.S., it was The Gates. Well, not just VHS. I believe in Grindhouse theaters, too, before it hit VHS. It was The Gates of Hell.
Mm-hmm.
So that's always what I called it. And it's got very cool poster work
Oh, yeah.
If you're looking at the VHS part, that skull with the city in the background, airbrushed, of course, big box artwork.
If you go on IMDb.com and you look up City of the Living Dead, you'll see the poster that he's talking about, because they've got the gate for whatever reason, they've got the Gates of Hell as the main poster on this listing when there are posters for City of the Living Dead. But I think
they're very good too. I do love the Italian. The Italians had a lot of great artists in the 70s and 80s doing their posters as well. It's just, and sometimes they would cross over. I mean, sometimes it would be the Italian art on these American posters and VHS covers, but a lot of times they would get changed up, you know. So, this one looks Italian anyways, even though it's not, you know.
And a lot of these movies are similar, but in this one, like, it really, I guess it lends itself for some cool artwork, because really a lot of these Blu-ray releases I see on here, the DVD releases, the various different title releases, all of them have pretty cool artwork.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen a cover or poster for Gates of Hell or City of the Living Dead, whichever you want to call it, that's bad.
Yeah, well, there's a couple on here I'll say that don't look as good as the others, but they look like they might have been like those late 90s, early 2000s DVD releases, so they don't look quite as good but to me, some of the more recent ones and then some of the classic posters and art, it's all pretty tight.
Yeah, I bought that tape, that big box Paragon VHS. I used to rent it. I don't know, like we're talking about how many times I've seen this movie. I probably rented it three or four times before eventually this video store sold some of their stock. And this is way before DVD came along. So they were just selling off just whatever overstock that maybe had worn. You know, they rented the hell out of it. But then after a while, you know, some stuff doesn't rent as much anymore. So, of course, they would get rid of some of their stock. And this was one that they sold off for, like, I don't know, $7 or $8, the big box Paragon VHS of it, which I haven't looked at it. I don't know what it goes for these days. A lot more than $7 or $8.
I can bet you it's more than $7 or $8.
Yeah. And so, that's one of those tapes I really love, because it's not only was it a movie that I used to watch a lot or rent back then, it was the actual movie that I rented back then.
Yeah, so that's cool.
Because I rented the hell out of it, and then they put it on sale, and I bought it. So,
and that's another thing we've talked about a number of times, too, in the past, is, like, that was really one of the selling points, you know, when you would go to the rental store back in the day, the box art on these things. And this is one of those that really would have caught your eye.
Yeah. They were good. Paragon, Wizard Video, Midnight Video, all these guys that were putting out the big boxes, which really, I mean, I don't know if we ever said this before, as many times we talked about big box VHS and various episodes or even on the VHS thing, that it started with porn. Big box, the big garish box art or whatever started with porn movies, and then it trickled over into the horror. You know, once they saw, well, hell, we can really, you know, we put this on an oversized VHS box. It makes it stand out more than the other ones on the shelf. So that's what they started doing, these companies.
I think anyone being truthful about the way things works shouldn't be surprised by this started with porn, because I think almost everything starts somewhere with porn.
Now, they didn't have, of course, you know, I'm sure they had various other things on the boxes. They didn't have airbrushed box art like they had on the porn. They were using the big box artwork to, you know, it was in the back room of the video store, so these weren't on the shelves that everybody was seeing. But yeah, once it got to the horror stuff, then they were getting these artists in to do this cool airbrush looking stuff that is very iconic. And one of the reasons why, I mean, speaking for myself and not just for myself, I'm sure for a lot of other VHS collectors, is one of the main draws for collecting this stuff now. And I mean, not to go off on a VHS tirade here. I mean, it's easy for me to do that, so I'll try to keep that brief. But I mean, it's, you know, when they started first putting DVDs out, you just mentioned it, like there was a time period when they were releasing, the art was shitty. It was just shitty. It was like they were taking actors' faces and pasting them on the, you know, the same way they were doing with Hollywood movies at the time, they were kind of doing with new DVD and releases or whatever with these artworks. And terrible looking, just terrible artwork. Now, though, there are actual, you know, there's distributors out there that really care about these movies, and they're usually put out the original artwork, and oftentimes put out a reversible cover with the whatever other artwork. Maybe it's a different, you know, if it's an Italian movie, they'll put out the main Italian artwork, and then they'll put flip side will be some other alternate Italian one, but usually it'll be the VHS artwork.
A lot of that probably has to do with the fact that a lot of the people that are buying Blu-rays and stuff now are the ones that probably still buy or VHS and collect movies. You know, like it's more of I stop short of saying niche, but it's, you know, it ain't mainstream anymore. Most people stream their shit, right? So the people that buy physical media are fewer and fewer as time goes on. And that's understandable. It's unfortunate, but it's understandable. So they probably market this stuff specifically to guys like, you know, like us, you know, because we still buy it and like, oh shit, I want the reversible cover with the cool artwork and all that type of stuff.
That is the cool thing. I mean, if there's a good thing about physical media being limited now, it's that there are more geared towards, like you said, towards us, right? Collectors. People that are going to buy these collectors. Yeah. So they'll have as much cool features as they have on it that they can. And they'll have that reversible cover and even have a slip cover. You know, a lot of times that they'll go in and I've seen those go for crazy prices. Some of these companies slip covers, they'll release a limited amount with the slip cover. And then after that's gone, they're done. Then they'll still release the DVD. It just won't have that special artwork slipcover. And then those people will turn around and buy it and sell those slipcovers.
Yeah, I was about to say, because you've got some people that don't care whether it has a slipcover or not. So they'll buy it and then sell the slipcover on eBay and probably pretty much pay for the damn Blu-ray that they just bought.
Yeah, and more sometimes.
Yeah.
They bring a whole other Blu-ray beyond that, you know, with no slipcover art.
It's a weird cycle, but such is collecting.
That's true.
Now we just have to hope that we raise the future generation to care enough about our collection so they just don't throw it away when we die.
And of course, the thing with VHS is it is a limited time frame. I think the time frame is longer than what people were speculating, because a lot of the times they were saying back then it's magnetic tape. It's going to not be any good in 30 years. Well, I mean, I do have tapes like from 1976, I think is the oldest one I have.
Wow.
So that's definitely well over 30 years. It's over 40 years, and it's... they still play. Now they don't play perfectly because, well, first of all, that tape was a rental tape. So it had already been played a shit ton of times already. So, but it does still play. I mean, you could sit there, you could put it on, you could watch it. It's going to be faded and all this, that, but I mean, it does still play. So, but what is, at some point we'll find what that window is, because that tape in 1976, give it another 10 years, maybe.
Yeah.
The magnetics, it won't work properly at all.
I think that depends on a lot of conditions too. You know, like as long as you keep it in a, you know, a climate controlled environment, you know, at the least, it'd probably last a lot longer, like you said, than you would think. Now, if you keep it out in a hot storage unit somewhere, it'll probably get so brittle, it'll just snap as soon as you try to play it. My experience with any type of tape, and this is from somebody that edits video for a living that actually had to deal with tape, you know, is that usually the problem that you run into is when you start jogging the tape around. If you just pop something in, say fast forward it to the end and rewind it to kind of pack the tape back in and then hit play, you're probably all right. But when you start fast forwarding or rewinding, jogging it around, that's when pop, you know, that's when it's going to happen.
Yeah.
But at least that's fixable with some Scotch tape.
And then by that same token, you get these rental tapes, you know there's certain scenes in these 80s movies and whatnot. You can tell which ones people paused,
yeah,
rewound, watched again, yeah, or whatever. Yeah. And I'm talking about not just, you know, your typical when you're a teenager, you know, it's boobies.
Yeah,
rewind.
Like
know,
a pause. Like the
but also
a certain scene in Fast Times in Ridgemont High or that movie, yeah, Wild Things or something. I don't know. There's just a couple that come to mind.
But also the same thing with horror movies. You know, when there's like a awesome kill, we always did that as teenagers. Yeah. Like, oh shit, rewind it, watch that again.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
but you can tell when is something's like a cool kill comes up. You get that wrinkle in the roll and the tape starts going a little bit or whatever. And you know,
yeah, and to your point, going back and forth and looking at a certain scene, that's not good for tape. That's where it's going to lose its integrity.
And to tie it in with this movie, there's quite a few of those scenes in this movie.
I can imagine.
I would like rewound it. Oh, watch that again. Oh, shit. That's fucked up.
Yeah. Wasn't it just a few weeks ago when we talked to Corey Gorski with his book VHS Collecting, and he was talking about how this movie was one of those movies that he used to show to friends? Wasn't it this one that he pointed out? And we hadn't even told him that we were going to be talking about this movie coming up.
Yeah. Yep. It is a memorable for that. And also before we move on from that and VHS as well, is when I was mentioning about the fact that I bought this tape back in, I don't know, 1989 or 90, somewhere in there, previously viewed stock, when the tape that I'd rented many times before from this particular local video store in my hometown. Later on down the road on Facebook, and I'm talking about like 2012, 13, 14, somewhere in there. No, actually, it was a little before. It's probably like 2010, 11, somewhere. I came across the lady because I knew them by name. It's a husband and wife that owned this video store. I came across her on Facebook and friended her and everything. Was telling her about, you know, she remembered us, not necessarily by name, but, you know, she remembered a few of us that came in there all the time. You know,
hey, it's that nerd that used to come into my shop all the time.
And he remember, you know, by face, like whenever I sent her a certain question, like, oh yeah, okay, I remember you. I definitely remember you. Like, uh-huh. And then I had the tape, that Gates of Hell tape on there. I'd posted it and she saw the cover of it and she said, oh yeah, I remember that tape. We used to rent that all the time. It was tape number 81. And I'm thinking, yeah, I mean, in my head, I'm thinking, yeah, sure. You know, she's probably just, you know, whatever. It's not going to be tape 81. So, cause I didn't have a picture of the actual cassette or the number of the, you know, it didn't have the number on the outer case anymore. But when I pulled the VHS out, sure enough, it was the sticker on there for number 81.
Wow.
She remembered this tape from back in 1990 and before, because she sold it. They sold it in 1990. So, I mean,
that tells you
she remembered the movie itself, and because it got rented the hell out of it.
I was about to say, tells you it got the shit rented out of it, and she's got a steel trap for a memory that she could remember such things.
Yeah, but because that box art is very iconic. Even if you're not a horror fan, these boxes would stick out in your head. I'm sure if you owned a video store and ran a video store, you probably got to know the movies, if not by title, by what was on the cover.
Well, to that point, we'll get into some of this. Now, this is actually the first film in Fulci's Gates of Hell trilogy, right?
Yeah, that's something that is not official. That's something that fans sort of came up with after the fact. That because the Gates of Hell was the first one of these three movies that was released. Well, at least it wasn't even called Gates of Hell over there anyways, in Italy or anywhere else, pretty much, but other than America, But it was just three films that were not linked by plot. The only thing that linked them together was the fact that there was a gate or some sort of entrance to hell in these three movies. And then the next one was The Beyond,
yep,
right, 1981. That was April 1981. This movie that we're talking about came out I can't remember which month, but it came out in 1980. I know The Beyond in Italy came out in April 81, and that was the second part of the Gates of Hell trilogy. And then Beyond that was House by the Cemetery, which came out in August of 1981 in Italy. And that was the third.
Now, before we go any further, I should remind listeners and viewers, if you're watching on YouTube, we are a spoiler-filled podcast. So from this point forward, just know we're probably going to give some stuff away. So if you've never seen City of the Living Dead, a.k.a. The Gates of Hell, we encourage you to go ahead and pause it now, go check it out, and then come back. But if you've seen City of the Living Dead and you think this movie's batshit crazy, go watch The Beyond. And that's another one that we got to get to sooner or later, right? We should just complete the trilogy next time we get around to another Italian flick.
Yeah, because these are some of as you can already tell, we haven't even gotten into it proper, and I've already just blabbered on about the VHS and how important that was to me and how many times I've seen it. So
yeah,
you pretty much have an idea of how I'm going to feel about this movie when we get into it and then the ratings and all that stuff. But
I've seen all
three. But yes,
personally, I've seen all three of these movies so much, though, sometimes I get things mixed up. Like, I think certain parts of this movie belongs to another movie and stuff. Like, you know, and even though, like you said, they don't, these three movies in particular don't really necessarily have anything to do with each other other than, like, they are thematically connected, right? Like, similar themes, but they don't really connect. But for some reason, I mix them up. I'm thinking certain parts are in this movie and vice versa.
I think there probably is a really good reason for that, too, is because they don't link plot-wise, just that thematic thing, but they do link some other ways, such as, of course, Lucio Fulci directed all three of them. That's
obvious, yeah.
But beyond that, he had a crew that he worked with on some of these, on a lot of these movies on this time, particular time period, from about 1979, 80, or whatever, into 84, 85, somewhere in there, depending on which movie. The cinematographer was Vincenzo Tomasi, and that was the same cinematographer for all three of these, as well as, like I said, other zombie and some other movies, you know, plenty of other movies he did. He was kind of his favorite cinematographer at the time, and certainly in the 80s. Was that, or wait, yeah, Vincenzo Tomasi. Shit, now I'm going to, it's the editor, or maybe, I might have confused those, because it might have been Vincenzo Tomasi.
Vincenzo Tomasi edited, and the cinematography was Sergio Salvati.
I knew I was going to cross the names, but. Yeah. Yes, both of them did all three of these films, and as well as others.
And the music. But that's the music, too, right? Fabio Fritti. Like, they worked together a lot, right?
Well, he did the two. He did Beyond, and he did this one. But Walter Rosati did the soundtrack to House by the Cemetery. But it sounds very comparable to Fabio Fritti's scores anyway.
And I didn't look at the other two films, but Dardano Sacchetti. But there's going to be a lot of that in this one, right? Dardano Sacchetti helped write the screenplay with Fulci, right? So there's got to be some connections there too with the other ones, right?
Yeah, and Sacchetti is somebody who I think I've brought his name up before on the podcast, but really nobody really talked about him that much back in the day. Like whenever you were when I was looking for a movie, I didn't look for Dardano Sacchetti's name. I would look for Fulci, or I'd look for Argento, or I'd look for maybe even Gianetto De Rossi if he did the special effects, or or Mario Fritzi. I'm like, I was going to have a great score, or Goblet, or whatever. But I never really thought to look at necessarily the writers on there. I mean, that's one of the most important things when it comes to movies, is the writers, beyond the director's thoughts. But Sacchetti did finally get some recognition in like Fangoria and Gorezone, I think later in the 80s. I know Chaz Balin definitely wrote about him, but he's kind of like one of those unsung people behind the scenes writing these movies. Now, he didn't necessarily write the entire things. He would like write an idea or a screenplay, and then the director would, of course, alter it in whatever fashion he wanted to. But you'll see Sacchetti's, if you pull his name up in IMDb, he's got a shit ton of credits. But yeah, a lot of shit ton of Fulci movies, and what's the name that did the Grim Reaper, Joe D'Amato movies, et cetera. You know, he did a lot, just a ton, and not just horror, but like the action ones, the sci-fi ones, all that stuff.
Yeah, and this one's actually influenced by H.P. Lovecraft and Lovecraft's The Dunwich Horror, because you know, remember they named the town in the movie Dunwich, right? Mm-hmm. So there's connections there to Lovecraft.
Yep. And the Beyond, the Book of Enoch, I believe, that very well may have been an actual occult name for a book or whatever, but I know Lovecraft used it as well, and other writers writing in his style used it. And so there was that, yeah, there's definitely a Lovecraft tie, I think, to all three movies, because the House by the Cemetery movie may not have a direct correlation to a story or whatever from Lovecraft, like the Dunwich town did in City of the Living Dead, or the Book of Enoch or whatever in Beyond, but just that a house, the Gothic setting and the occult things going on there and whatnot is very Lovecraftian too. So,
mm-hmm.
So yeah, a lot of things are similar in these three movies, even though they weren't linked at all plot wise.
Well, this movie was released in Italy, August 11th of 1980, and as a lot of these type of flicks were back then, it would take years for it to come to America. Right? It didn't, like I said, August 11th of 80. It didn't like come to the U.S. proper until April 8th of 1983. So
yeah,
almost three full years later. And that was probably straight to video, I would assume, right? Probably even at that point.
Yeah, I don't know if it. I assume that it hit some grind, like New York, 42nd Street,
limited,
Grindhouse.
Limited play.
I'm sure it probably hit a little bit. Limited play there, more than likely. I'm sure it didn't. I mean, I'm not sure, but I would assume it didn't open in like your average, whatever theater in like a small town that I grew up in or whatever, or it didn't hit your average theaters. It was probably, if it was playing in theaters, it was hitting the grindhouse circuit. And then, like you said, went to VHS in, I think, 83, right?
Yeah,
I believe that's what that.
Yeah, well, that's when it was released in the U.S. Yeah, that's probably around the same time. So,
and it very well could have hit both. You know, it could have, they could have had the print going around the grindhouse district as well as the time that it get, you know, getting released on DVD or on DVD on VHS and shortly after that and beta.
It is not rated because I assume this probably didn't have to go through the MPAA. You know, it probably had a limited release here in the U.S. anyway, so like it doesn't get a proper rating. But obviously, if you've ever seen it, or if you listen this far, you know this would be rated R for sure. If it had a normal rating, this is definitely a rated R. Totally.
Oh, yeah. Maybe today's date they might get away with some R-rated stuff. Back then, it would have been the equivalent of an X.
Yeah, or maybe. You know, yeah, you're right.
If they submitted it to the MPAA, they would definitely, back then in the 80s.
Yeah, because also on top of that, not that it would get that, but on top of that, this is before PG-13 was even a thing, right?
Yeah.
So this ain't getting PG, right? For sure, getting PG. Yeah. So yeah, this is rated R, maybe rated X back then.
They could have just went the route that Dr. Butcher MD did, you know, Zombie Holocaust. They didn't submit it to the MPAA, and it was gory as fuck, and they just said, it's R-rated, and they just slapped an R on the poster themselves.
Yeah.
Without even going to the MPAA. Speaking of that, that also was a big box VHS. It says rated R on the back of it. If you've ever seen Dr. Butcher MD, you know, ain't no way in hell they were getting away with an R rating for that movie back then. Not even today could you get away with that.
The total runtime was 1 hour, 33 minutes. So, it was, you know, right there at that nice runtime that we normally enjoy. It was, of course, produced by Mino Loy. I didn't see. Okay, there's a production company, Dania Film. Medusa Distribution, and then National. National National Cinema. Good Lord, I'm just fucking everything up today. Cinematographica. Cinematographica. God damn. And it was distributed by Medusa. Whatever he said a minute ago. Distribuzione. I didn't see a budget. But it did go on to make somewhere around the equivalent of $1.8 million. Because I think that was what the lira, and that's a dead currency, if I'm not mistaken. So there's really no way to fully compare, you know, with inflation and everything. But for as much success as something like this could have, I guess it had it, right? I mean, like, for a movie that's probably, you know, very regional in the sense of, like, you know, it probably just came out there in Italy and a handful of other countries, and then eventually a few years later it makes its way over here. I would imagine they probably made way more on video sales years later, right?
Yeah, that's probably where they counted on that. I mean, they made these movies for international markets because they could sell them easily to international markets, but not, like you said, necessarily because they were going to make a shit ton of movie in theaters, but more so because they would fill video store shelves and make a shit ton of money that way.
Yeah. And I'm sure they did. I wish there was better ways of tracking. And literally, it's probably impossible to truly track, especially for the older stuff, but home video sales, home video rentals and all that. I wish there was a source you could go to that was more specific, you know, or correct in those numbers. Because you can look stuff up and you'll see various numbers. And I'd say it's damn near impossible to keep up with because some of these places that distributed these things don't exist anymore, and they probably never kept records to begin with, you know. Then you're talking about the mom and pop rental stores that probably never reported numbers anywhere, so you'd never get the true number. But it would be fascinating on a movie like this to see like what it actually pulled down in the home video market.
Yep. And I'm sure there's some of these movies that of course made probably way more money in the home market than even some blockbuster Hollywood movies were making in the theaters.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, if you're talking about over the course of from 19, whatever, 80, I mean, not for this movie in particular, but, you know, 1980 to 1989, let's say, just the period of the 80s.
Yeah.
These movies just raked in money at video stores, some of them. I mean, some of them had their lives on video and not, you know, did nothing at the theater and then turn around and become this cult phenomenon on home video.
It, of course, was written and directed by Lucio Fulci, and sooner or later, we have to do a whole Spook Show spotlight on Lucio Fulci. I mean, don't worry. It's coming. One day or another, it's coming. You can guarantee that. But I think we need to get a few more of his movies on here before we take the deep dive in his career. so everybody can kind of, you know, have a chance to watch a few more and kind of appreciate it before we dive into it. Plus, there's been documentaries and stuff about Fulci, right?
I think there is. I haven't seen them, but I would like to see some of the documentaries. I know that there's our Argento one that's Michele Suovi, which, by the way, that's a connection in this movie. Might as well mention that. Michele Suovi is a director, or was a director. I don't know that he's done, you know, the Italian horror industry is not so great these days. And even since the mid-90s on, they started losing funding for being able to do these cult-type films. So there's not so many directors there making horror movies as much as there used to be, of course. I mean, Argento's still doing it. But, yeah, Michele Suovi was in this movie, and he gets his brains ripped out.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you
there's a couple people that get their brains ripped out in this.
A couple people do. Well, he's the one that gets his brains ripped out, and then he's with his girlfriend in the car.
Yeah.
And we'll save that scene as we until we get a little bit later.
Yeah.
But that guy, he became a director. He was already a assistant director, and he was working his way up. I forget what year it was, but he did his first one with a documentary on Argento called Dario Argento's World of Horror. And then he did The Church, which I don't know if you've seen that one.
Mm-hmm.
Devil's Daughter, which was called The Sect or La Secta. And then Cemetery Man, of course. That's mm-hmm. his big movie. That's the one that everybody, if you don't know any of those other ones I mentioned, you'll know probably know Cemetery Man or Della Morte, Della More.
He was,
he became a big time director himself of cult films or whatever.
He was also in Demons. He was also in Demons too.
He was the silver mask.
Yeah.
He was wearing that half silver mask and the one handing out the Metropole tickets.
Yeah. That everybody's just like, yeah, sure, I'll go. Free show.
Yeah.
Big mistake.
What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah. Until they locked him in there.
But he did a lot of that type of acting. I mean, I don't think he ever was a star in any of these movies, but he always would have some sort of cameo role, it just seems like. Oh, and I think I mentioned that his first film was The Church. Beyond that World of Horror, Dario Argento documentary. Film proper was a movie called Stage Fright, which is another one I need to get on here at some point. It's like a giallo slasher type thing. And I don't remember where I was going with this train of thought.
But yeah, he had a lot of good stuff.
Oh, now I'm getting back to where it was. It was the documentary. That's what brought it up. The documentary.
Oh, yeah. It seems like there's another one. I didn't look it up, but I think there's another one called Fulci Lives or something like that. There's a number of documentaries about Fulci. So maybe that's something we can take a dive into on the Spook Show Spotlight episode that we inevitably do for Mr. Fulci one day, because he's a horror icon.
Oh, yeah. And also we'll have to go down the various routes of his, because he's, like a lot of those Italian directors, it wasn't just known for horror, although that's what he's mainly known for. They dip their toes in everything. So, I mean, the giallo genre, which is linked to horror, we need to get one of his giallos on. We need to get one of his crazy fantasy movies like Conquest.
Mm-hmm.
Or post-apocalyptic movies like New Gladiators. I mean, westerns, he did some violent westerns like Massacre Time. I mean, now he goes all the way back to the damn late 50s, I think, or at least early 60s, doing comedies and rock and roll movies and stuff like that before, branching out into some other stuff a little bit later. And then sometime in the 70s or late 60s, going into the early 70s, when he started doing giallos, he became more known for horror. But yeah, we need to touch on all these different genres at some point.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to believe he's been gone as long as he has. He passed away back in 1996. So that dude left a big impression on horror and just film in general, but specifically on horror. I mean, he'll live forever with some of the stuff that he did, no doubt. And we'll get into that, like I said, at some point with a spotlight on him, because he most definitely deserves it. This stars Christopher George as Peter Bell, Catriona McCall as Mary, Carlo De Mayo as Jerry, Antonella Interlinghi, I think is how you say her last name, as Emily. And then, so you've got Giovanni Lombardo Radici as Bob. And I was trying to see if there was any other ones really worth mentioning. I mean, there's a few other names, and you talked about Michele Suovi. I don't see anybody else that jumps out at me there, but Fulci actually has an uncredited, I guess, small bit in here, is Dr. Joe Thompson in the movie. And I don't recall seeing him, but apparently he's in there somewhere.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, that's one thing that you'll notice, too, when we do these Fulci movies. He was almost, I mean, I won't say that he was in every one of his movies, but he was in a lot of his movies in small little cameo roles like that.
He was the one after, probably one of the craziest kill scenes.
Yeah, the one that I was alluding to earlier that we aren't giving away just yet.
He's a little short, kind of baldish man. because he wasn't wearing the glasses.
Yeah, I don't think he had his glasses on this one necessarily. Right. But as soon as you see it, when you see it, like if you look at a picture of him, and then you'll know. Yeah, you'll see him, and then you'll pick him out. Like I didn't know what he looked like back in the day when I was watching these movies, because you never saw again. You didn't have the internet, so you would hope that you would maybe somebody would print a picture of him in Fangoria or Gorzon, and they did. You know, a little bit later. But when I first started renting these movies, he was probably in like 6, 7, 8, 9 movies that I'd seen of his and didn't even know that was Fulci until later when I went back and, you know, saw a picture of him, and then I picked out, oh, shit, there he is right there.
Yeah.
It's refreshment time, and our refreshment stand is loaded with good things to eat. There's crispy, crunchy popcorn and hot, delicious buttered popcorn. Lots of candy and frosty, refreshing cold drinks. Why not treat yourself at the Refreshment Center now?
For you listeners of the All-American Spook Show podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. So I went on over to audible.com and I typed in Lucio Fulci just to see what popped up. We actually have one thing that popped up directly for him, and that is La Luna Neri by Lucio Fulci, narrated by Maurizio Savialalo. I'm once again butchering the name, but that was a little over 4 hours long, and that's an Audible exclusive. Or on here it says Esclusiva Audible. It's actually in Italian. So I guess this is some short story or some adaptation of something that Fulci did that is Audible exclusive, but it's in Italian. So I don't know exactly how that works if you want to listen to it in English over on Audible, but it's there if you want to give it a try. And if you're listening to this, it probably does interest you on some level. So to download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/spookshow. Again, that's audibletrial.com/spookshow for your free audiobook. So I'm going to hop back over to imdb.com and click on plot summary to see what it comes up with. This could be interesting. Okay, yeah, well, we've got a couple long ones here, so I guess I'll show you the one sentence, brief one. A reporter and a psychic race to close the gates of hell after the suicide of a clergyman caused them to open, allowing the dead to rise from their graves. Yeah, that lets you know what you're in for as far as what the fuckery, right? This one, I'll just go with the longest one, and this was submitted by Hugo there on IMDb. In New York
City,
In New York City, reporter Peter Bell, following a lead, believes there's a story to be had regarding a seance that went awry. Although that specific story does not materialize, he does find another concerning the young woman Mary Woodhouse at the center of that seance incident. She who, during the seance, saw a vision of a priest who hung himself in a cemetery in a place called Dunwich. Teresa, the medium conducting the seance, informs Peter and Mary that her vision, according to the Book of Enoch, has opened a portal to hell for the dead to emerge, which, if not closed by All Saints Day, a few days away, will overtake humanity, meaning its destruction by the evil dead. By the time Peter and Mary arrive in Dunwich, which they discover is in Massachusetts, they find that destruction has begun, which some of the locals attribute to witchcraft, the talk of which has pervaded the region for centuries, or to a young man named Bob. Peter and Mary do find a local therapist named Jerry and his assistant Sandra, who too believe what they are told of Mary's vision from what they have witnessed. But I would assume you would fucking believe it when you see what they saw, right? The foursome have to locate the tomb of the priest, Father Thomas, as the key to closing the portal. And boy, if that sounds nutty, it is. In the true Italian horror manner, right? Nutty, extreme gore, and a lot of what the fuck is going on here. Although I will find, once again, we got to get to The Beyond at some point. This one was a lot easier to follow than The Beyond is.
Yeah, I would say it's got a little bit more of a, because, you know, even though we haven't done a whole lot of Italian horror on here yet, we may have talked about this before, is that Italians weren't really known, I mean, when it comes to cult films especially, weren't really known for tight plots. The plot was just a bare bones thing to get from this visual to that visual. Yeah. They were more concerned with the nightmarish, dreamlike quality and just visual cues. So plot became sort of backseat to that stuff, to the visual.
And that's the one thing that I think that sticks out to me the most about this movie, really throughout it, but right from the get-go, is that, like, you don't really know what makes this priest kill himself. I assume you just kind of put it together like, well, I guess he just felt driven to do this because the forces of hell are, like, poking him to do this, that if he does this, it's going to open the gates or something, right? That's about the only sense I can make of it.
That's about his best. He's like the occult forces are driving him to do it, I guess.
Yeah, so he does it, and it does, you know, it opens this portal, but I guess they have this window of a few days to get to Dunwich and close these gates before All Saints Day or something. It was essentially what you're working with here. So just run with it, baby. We've explained it best enough. Just go with us.
Yep.
And along the way, you see some wild shit. I mean, right from the beginning, right? Like you get the priest that kills himself, and then Mary, who I guess is one of the leaders of the seance, she quote unquote dies, right? Like, or does she die, or is it like an appearance of death? Because that was one thing that can kind of confuse me too, because there's some instances here where someone would die, you'd see it happen, you'd see them get killed or whatever, and then they would come back almost like a zombie or something, right? Like, I guess now they've been possessed and they work for Satan or evil, whatever.
I know that Mary wasn't like that. I think she was just sort of in some sort of death-like trance, right? That they thought she was dead, and then she got buried alive.
Yeah, which makes for a cool scene, if nothing else, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, very tense scene. That yeah. You know, because I guess we could talk. Mentioned that part real quick is that, you know, at that seance, she Christopher George's character, you know, going out to the cemetery, right, where she's being buried. And there's the grave workers there that are digging the grave or whatever. And then they you know, go on lunch, right?
Yeah.
And then he's just standing there in the cemetery, like kind of looking, and he's about to walk off himself when he thinks he maybe hears something, or maybe it's just his imagination, that he hears a scream or you know, whatever. He's not sure, right? But we see that she's in her coffin, which hasn't been buried yet. It's in the process, you know, so it's still above ground. Well, right in the hole, right? It hadn't been covered or whatever. She's screaming in there. So she's obviously alive. And then he finally does come up, kind of walk close. And he finally does hear her. And then he's like, picks up a pickaxe, and he's like slamming this pickaxe through the coffin lid inches from her face. So it's like a very tense, very, very cool, tense scene, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's like, he slams it in like, three times, I think? And like maybe four times. Each time it's like closer and closer. Like, man, you're just expecting him to just catch her right in the forehead with that pickaxe.
Yeah. And he's ripping parts of the coffin lid up each time he pulls it out so that she, yeah, well, also before all this, she was in there scratching at the thing so bad that she, you know, her fingernails, I guess, are coming off. So she's scratching because, you know, she thinks, she doesn't know. She wakes up. She, for all she knows, she's probably already been buried under the ground in the dirt. And, you know, so she's just screaming to get help, and then nobody's coming, of course. So she starts clawing at the inside of the coffin lid, and there's like bloody, you know, marks where she's scratching till her fingernails, I guess, are basically coming off. And then in the meantime, he's in there, starts slamming the pickaxe in there and lifting up part of the coffin. So then you end up with a hole right where her head is, and then she's screaming. And it's just another, again, a very cool visual, just something that attacks.
Right, absolutely. Setting up. Cool visually, very tense scene, but it makes no sense. And I only say that because in this scenario, if there is a coffin that's just been put in the ground and it's not buried, I mean, it's in the ground, but it's not like completely covered with dirt yet. There's some dirt, but not a lot, right? It's enough to where, shouldn't he have just leaned down and opened it? It's like the most ineffective fucking coffin opening ever, because instead he's just like, ah, fuck. He panics and just starts pickaxing it. But if you think but if you think somebody's alive in there, wouldn't you just fucking like brush some dirt off or something and then open it? Now, then again, these things are sealed. Hey, right?
You know, they're not airtight when they're above ground, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, yeah, when you're down under the ground and they got dirt on them, of course, you're not going to be able to breathe for that long. But I mean, like you would think, I mean, if you're thinking about it rationally rather than it being a cool visual for this Italian horror movie.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Rationally, he would just say something, hey. It's all right. You're not being buried. Hold on a second. I'm getting out.
Let me just open it. Hold on. No, he just grabbed
that doesn't work.
Pickaxe.
Hey, I'm gonna like try and knock this line. I don't know. Who knows? I mean, I don't know exactly how coffins work, but I assume they're not worried about people getting out of them.
Well, I hope I never get in the scenario where I've got to like rationally figure this out, right? If I'm at the cemetery, I'll be honest with you. I'm at the cemetery and I hear somebody screaming in the ground, I'm probably running the other way. So. kudos for him for at least, like, you know, oh shit, somebody's in there.
Yeah.
But the only part, well, I mean, there's a lot that doesn't make sense, I guess, you know, if you really overanalyze it. But I guess the question is, was she dead? I mean, because they thought she was dead enough to put her in the fucking box and bury her. So, like, she must have been, if not dead, pretty close to death, right? Because she didn't, my point is she didn't come back like the rest of the people came back. The other people that died, they come back like zombies and try to kill people and shit. She comes back and she's perfectly normal. So, what do you think was the difference there?
I think she was just in the death-like trance, I guess, or sort of a... I mean, I know now it doesn't happen in modern times, really, I don't think, but, you know, in the past, you know, they used to accidentally bury people that were alive, and that's why they had the dead ring. That's where the term dead ringer comes from, because they would have a bell, and they would have this thing that would go down in the coffin so that if they were to wake up, you know, not be dead, they could pull this thing and ring the bell, and so that's what the dead ringer was. But, you know, we're talking about way back, you know.
Yeah, hundreds of years ago. Can you imagine, by the way, not just a small tangent, can you imagine they think you're dead, you wake up underground, and then you start ringing that bell. Thank God they put a bell here, right? You start ringing that bell, and then who's around to listen to for the bell?
I know, you're going to be waking up at, you know, 2 in the morning.
That's exactly what happened.
Caretakers are going through there in the daytime or not.
Yeah.
You're at the mercy of waiting for a caretaker of some sort or somebody else to be some other funeral going on and somebody's getting buried at I'm pretty sure there's probably a lot of people that ended up getting buried alive. Obviously they did. That's why they had to have the ringers on there.
Yeah.
It became a problem, I guess, when they realized.
Like they're out there at 3:30 in the morning ringing the fuck out of that bell and then they just die because there's nobody there to hear it.
Yeah.
What a horrible, horrible way to go.
It's true. It's
terrible. Anyways, how about right before that, though, the whole coffin thing, where I think it's in the bar where those guys are like, remember, I think that we're supposed to be where Salem was. Whatever. There's this like loose witchcraft thread here that's kind of weaved in and out where.
Yeah. Kind of like they're the descendants of the Salem witch burners, the people that burn the witches in Salem. So they're being punished.
Some people believe it and some people don't. And they're in that bar and then flames just start randomly shooting up out of the floor, but not burning anything. Yeah. I don't think I'm going to doubt the witchcraft shit anymore after that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Or like the cop too, like the cop after the seance, right?
Yeah.
When we were talking about Mary earlier, the cop comes in and he's basically like, so you expect me to believe? And then all of a sudden whoosh, whoosh, the flames do it. And he's all right, I guess that's right now. Yeah. But we're dealing with it.
Another random thing about this, or at least a little storyline that is at play here, is this guy Bob. What the hell's up with Bob? He's like the town creep or something, or maybe he's just misunderstood, I guess, or something. And he just kind of keeps appearing.
he's mentally challenged, right? So he's got, I think that's what the gist of it was that, he's probably done some things in the past, but it's based on him being, you know, like mentally challenged that he's been blamed for these things that he did do probably, but he is a perv.
I was about to say, well, there's something there because he was giving the old wink wink to that blow up doll.
Yeah. We gotta talk a little bit about this guy first. His name, you mentioned his name earlier. His real name, his Italian name is, Giancarlo? No, not Giancarlo. No. Lombardo Radice? I can't remember his first name right now.
Yeah, Giovanni Lombardo Radice.
Giovanni Lombardo Radice. Well, he went by an anglicized name for a lot of his credits, not in this movie, I guess, but John Morgan is the name he went through by in like, I guess, English speaking countries.
Hmm.
He was in, you've seen Make Them Die Slowly, right? Cannibal Ferox.
Mm hmm. Mm-hmm.
He was, I think it was Mike Logan in that movie, the drug dealer.
Okay.
The real asshole in that movie. he became like the whipping boy of Italian horror for some reason. Like he would always play these messed up roles, either a complete asshole like in Make Them Die Slowly or Cannibal Ferox, or somebody like this, like Bob, a misunderstood perv or something.
Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah, he very rarely did he play just your average, you know, good guy or whatever. Like he was always something crazy.
And in this, it is kind of half of one or the other because you kind of feel bad for him, but also there's probably some legitimacy to it. So it's kind of like, you know?
Yeah.
But it really doesn't seem like there's much of a reason for him to be there other than his ultimate demise, which, you know, we'll get to in a second. But other than the way he goes, and even then, it's just like, God damn, man. You know? Holy shit.
Yeah, that's an amazing, like I said, we'll get to that.
It is, but his presence in the story, my point, it doesn't seem to make any difference. I mean, it doesn't have any bearing on the story, right?
Nah, he's just one of those characters that, as you know, you watch a shit ton of Italian horror movies, you'll notice his character, not just him as an actor, like I mentioned before, but
the type.
That type of a red herring almost. Well, in this one, he's not really a red herring because this is in a giallo film. He would be one of the red herrings.
Yeah. For sure, absolutely.
This guy's possibly killed him, you know, but then you know it's not because they make it look a little too obvious. So. But even in these supernatural horror movies where you don't have a red herring, you know that it's supernatural occult forces are like, they still put them in there, these types of characters. And I think it is really just to have in these movies in the 80s, especially the adult gory horror movies that they were putting out as to throw into the meat grinder. Like what happens with him. But his character, the way he is, though, I think it's because it was John Morgan or, you know, Giovanni Lombardo Radice, is like, I don't know if they wrote him, if they knew he was going to be in the movie and they had that in mind when they wrote the script for this or what, or if he did that himself or what, just, but it is the typical role that he would play in this movie. If you're going to put him in the movie, he could only play Bob in this movie.
Yeah. Well, we got to get him in here somehow. Just make him the town perv and then he'll meet a grisly end. Don't worry.
It might very well have been that they did that too, because you know they make him sort of creepy so that when he gets killed, but then like you said, they also kind of give him a bit of a what's the word? They make you feel sorry for him too.
Yeah, he's a sympathetic character in a lot of ways too, because man, you know they're giving this dude a hard time. Maybe he didn't do it, you know.
Yeah. So then, that might also be it.
Like, and then he gets then he basically gets the Freddy, almost like the Freddy Krueger treatment, and that like the townspeople got his ass in the end, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Oh yes. I'm all right.
Once again, it's in the, I guess it's in the bar, that scene where the mirror breaks randomly, and then I'll look at it like, well, time to go, when the wall splits open.
Yeah, the mirror breaks, and then at first they're like, hey, what's going on here with this? You know, like type thing. Like,
who broke the mirror? Right,
natural. And then the guy, the bartender, is like, "Oh, a truck passing by, it's vibration. It's all fine. Yeah, Have another beer."
And then the fucking wall splits
open, and they're like, "Oh, cat, we're out."
Yeah, I got to go check on the cat. Bing yong. But there's still that air of like they don't believe what the fuck they're seeing. You know?
Yeah. I mean, I think they did. Some of those townsfolk that were in the bar kind of were like,
yeah, they believed it, but they were kind of in denial about it, you know.
Yeah, and including the bartender who was just like pissed that his clientele got ran off.
I think it's around this time where you get one of the first good, at least the first kill. I wouldn't say good, when the priest appears to Emily, and then she just gets like worm pie faced. You can't even really describe exactly what happens to her. He just kind of like just starts smushing worm goo or whatever the fuck into her face, and that kills her. I don't know what the hell he did to her.
Yeah, this can be explained away as they're Italian. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it looks cool. You know, it's like, oh shit, this zombie ghoul priest guy. Okay, he kind of grabs her by the face and pie faces her, but it's just like he's just smushing worms into her face. Like, here, this is gross. You know. And then she just falls over dead.
Out of like this decayed mound of worms and just gunk that you don't know what it is, just slams it in her face for the gross out. I think it's really for the gross out factor. I mean, you know, in literal thing, yeah, it wouldn't make any sense. And nobody's gonna, unless you choke on one of the worms and it goes down your windpipe or something, you're probably not gonna die from some, you know, a clump of whatever worms, and it's gonna be nasty. You're probably not gonna die from it. But in an Italian horror movie, you could very well die from it.
Another unsavory character is the mortician. Well, he's like stealing shit off the bodies and stuff, and then the old dead woman like bites his hand or whatever the fuck happened. You don't see it. It's weird because you don't see it happen. Like, you see him like reach down to take some jewelry or whatever the fuck he's doing to her, and then he just kind of screams and pulls his hand back, and there's a huge chunk taken out of his hand.
Yeah. And then it goes back to her, and she's perfectly still.
Yeah, she's still dead. So like, what the fuck? And there's a lot of that disappearing act shit in this movie, right? Where like the priest is there or the zombie person is there and then they look back and they're gone. Or they would just straight up disappear in front of your eyes. Like, you know.
Yeah.
The bleep, you know.
Yeah. That supernatural aspect of thing, or like the glass breaking and like shooting into the wall and blood just dripping from the wall.
Yeah, what the fuck? Like, once again, cool visually, but like, what the hell? You know, I guess that's the whole Gates of Hell aspect of it, right?
Yeah, as well as the zombies. See, some people, I mean, some people will throw criticism at the movies like, well, if what you didn't know what you want to do, like, you didn't know if you wanted to have a supernatural movie or a zombie movie. So, you know, but I think the zombies aren't so much zombies in the sense of like, Dawn of the Dead or even Fulci's movie Zombie or Zombie 2. But they're more like just a manifestation of hell. It's kind of like in the Bible, even in the Revelations, where it talks about, you know, the living dead and whatnot. So it's more so that. It's more so biblical occult zombies, for lack of a better word, or just dead, living dead, than it is flesh eaters from the Romero variety or even Fulci's earlier, you know, zombie film.
It is a weird, like, classification in this movie, because like you said, they're not necessarily outright zombies, or, you know, but there is some zombie aspect to it. It's kind of weird, you know. And even on the poster for the Gates of Hell, it says the dead shall rise and walk the earth. So I mean,
yeah, they definitely used the taglines and things like it was going to be, which again, that's probably why some of that criticism was lobbed at it, is that if you look at the poster and you look at the tagline and you go see it, if you were seeing it in the Grindhouse, I guess, or if you rented it, you might very well be expecting, and also it's Fulci, so he did Zombie too, you know, which is a very full-on Romero-style flesh-eater zombie movie. You would be forgiven for thinking that this is what this is going to be, because it's taglines and everything kind of leads you to believe that, but it's not, you know, it's not a supernatural horror, that Gates of Hell thing, where that's where the dead are coming from. Not, they're not rising in an apocalyptic kind of way and eating people, even though they bite that guy's hand. And I think there was even some more subplots, maybe of, I don't know if it just didn't get into the movie or what, of them eating people, the zombies, but it wasn't supposed to be like a Romero-style, end-of-the-world, apocalyptic, flesh-eating zombie thing.
But there's definitely some aspects of it there, too, even whether they were conscious or you know, or not of it. Especially when you get toward that last, say, 30 minutes or so, when people start dying quicker, and then they start returning, basically they're zombies, right? I mean, that's kind of the way I read it. Now, it's supernatural type zombies, but they're zombies.
Yeah. So, yeah, he does play with both genres. He just, he wasn't going fully down the path of the you know, post-apocalyptic flesh-eating zombie variety, but he did put some of that in there. And again, that was probably just I don't know if it was producers wanted it in there or what necessarily, you know, to play up the zombie aspect more, because the same thing is in The Beyond. You know, you have the supernatural aspect, which is 90-some-odd% of the movie. But throughout it, there is also the zombie thing. And at the end, there's a zombie horde, right, in that hospital in The Beyond.
Mm-hmm.
So House by the Cemetery, not so much. House by the Cemetery, you have the one, you know, one, without getting into that movie, because we're not talking about, I'm not going to try and give away any spoilers on that one until we get to that movie. But let's just say that you don't have the full, there are less zombie aspects to that movie than there are to The Beyond. And I think it's just a matter of playing up. Because he was known for Zombie 2, he's, you know, hey, I'm Fulci, I need to have some zombies in it. So, you know, now he put them in there, but then the more supernatural aspect rather than, like I said, rather than the typical flesh-eating post-apocalyptic variety.
Now we get up to some of the more interesting deaths and kills here from this point. The couple in the car, you alluded to earlier. Explain what happened here.
Well, he saw the preacher that had hung himself. I guess because of that, then he gets them.
Yeah, he becomes like this harbinger of evil. Like, you look in his eyes, and he just makes you bleed out of your eyes. And apparently,
and they do that a couple of times in here too with the eye bleeding thing. And if you're really looking at it, you can see how they did it. You know, if you really pay attention, like the corners of their eyes, and you can see how they're like pumping it to make it go down and like just drip. It's still a cool visual though.
Oh yeah. And this I think is very much a Fulci thing, as we've talked about before, and we haven't talked about it on this particular episode. I'm surprised we got this far in without mentioning Fulci's affection for eyes, or at least either like zooming into them, having things come out of them like blood, or usually though having things go in them.
Oh, there's so many like slow zoom ins, zoom outs of eyes, the quick zooms into eyes, the things coming close, like the pickaxe, right, came close to her eyes. There's so much with the eyes.
And it's not, I mean, it's definitely Fulci, because he had a thing for it, but Italians in general, a lot of times, you'll see some of these movies, and Fulci did it in just about every single movie. He had some sort of a fixation on the eyes, whether, like we said, whether it be zooming into them or mutilating them in some way or whatever. Yeah, but
there's got to be
other experiences would do that too. So
there's got to be something not, there, like, you know, they always say the eyes are the windows to the soul, you know, so yeah. There's got to be some shit there, right?
Yeah, that's what I was going to mention too. And I think he's, if it's not him, somebody or another Italian has said that. That's very, that quote is very apt for those, you know, zoom ins and eyeball violence and things. It's, yeah, it's just that symbolism.
Well, the next one ain't, we mentioned earlier, but it ain't eyeballs, but it's pretty fucked up. And that's what happens to old Bob, old Bob the perv. And that's when basically he gets cornered up by one of the dads who just thinks that he was doing something to his daughter, because he catches him in a car with his daughter, even though they weren't doing anything. But he chases him around, kind of corners him, and then grabs a hold of him and puts him on like a, what is that? Like a, some type of drill, like a drill press kind of thing. It's got to be one of the slowest, like fucking, oh, you're going to anticipate this ain't going to happen. This ain't going to happen. This ain't going to, yes, it's happening. And then the drill goes right through his fucking skull. Like, but through it, like below his ear, like through his like jaw and neck, right? That area, but just straight through. Yeah,
this is an amazing setup. I mean, like I was talking to him when we were watching it. I was telling Tiana, like, Tom Savini himself couldn't have done this any better.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
This build up payoff of, I mean, just the whole setup of this. Okay. You got the drill, which is obviously a real drill whenever you're looking at it through the POV, camera lens POV of Giovanni Lombardi. I can't think of his name. I'm scared of Bob. Yeah. But you're kind of POV of Bob looking at the drill. It's a real drill coming towards the camera. Then, of course, cut to him squirming in the drill, and it's very obviously a real drill that he's very close to. I mean, Italians didn't care about this, Larry. They'll put their actors in whatever harm's way to get the shot, you know. So I'm sure it was a very real drill as it was getting a little bit close, whatever. But then, yeah, you know, as it's right there by his face, it's going onto his face. I'm sure it was some sort of dulled thing where it was just spinning right here, because you could see it like spinning where his cheek is.
Yeah.
Then it cuts away, of course, to the fake head when it goes through. But the thing is, the cool thing is you see it go through the cheek, and then you see a shot from above where you see the drill in his mouth turning in the head. This would be the fake head still. And then you see it come to the other side of the cheek or whatever and come out the other side of the cheek, which of course is still the fake head.
And they probably then drilled it, and they probably drilled it, made sure the drill went right to that area so they could get that mouth shot, you know, so you could see it go through and still turning in his mouth.
Very cool image. And then they cut to the real head. This is how I wasn't sure whether they did it, because the final shot is his real head with the drill somehow spinning behind it. I mean, it's supposed to be through it, and it still looks like it's going through it. I still don't really know exactly how they did that part of the effect at the very end. Because that's his real head kind of like squirming a little bit or whatever, the actor's head.
That's because they killed him. This really happened. This was a documentary. That's why you can't figure it out.
Very, very. If you're into gore and splatter movies, then this is one of those payoffs. And this is one of those that got paused and rewound.
Oh,
even
when
I was showing friends, oh, did you see that shit?
Yeah, this is the one scene I was thinking of when you said the tape was worn out in certain parts.
Yeah. And of course, the other one right before. Wait, we didn't talk about the gut puking though, right?
No, we didn't.
That's right. We went on about the eyeball, about the bleeding from the eyeballs, and then we went on about eyeball.
Oh, you know, yeah, yeah.
But we forgot to mention the payoff for that one was she starts puking out her entire intestinal tract.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, like, and they really stick with it. Like, but the same thing with the drill, right? They stick with it. Like, this is Italian horror for Fulci in particular. Like,
now,
we're not just going to see it happen and cut to the next scene. No, you're going to fucking watch this. And then, so you see all of her intestines coming out of her mouth. She's like yakking it out.
Including her stomach or whatever, or lung, or whatever the hell that was. The very last thing that came out was huge. You know?
Yeah, Lord knows.
The entire stomach itself, I guess. But again, this is one of those scenes where it starts with the real actress, and kudos to this actress for like putting whatever the hell that was in her mouth, because that was the actual actress when it first started.
Yeah, it's probably pig intestines or some shit.
It probably was. Knowing them, it probably was actual animal stuff because they wanted to get it real. I mean, Savini used that, Day of the Dead when Rhodes got ripped in half, mm-hmm. he used actual animal guts.
Got
right long story it. Short on that, that he had in the refrigerator and they left on the refrigerator unplugged for the weekend, came back. I mean, they accidentally unplugged it or whatever, came back to rotting innards in the refrigerator and they still used it. And those actors, he didn't tell them to do this, but those actors put those rotting animal guts in their mouth because it's a Romero zombie film. And by them, they wanted to be seen eating guts in as zombies in a Romero film. So they did it. But yeah, this just put something in her mouth. And I don't know if it was latex or it didn't look like latex.
Yeah, no, it had to have been legit.
Then just let it fall out of her mouth with fake blood, I guess, and all this stuff. Then it cuts to a fake head for the final. Like, there's no way that a human person could do this type thing.
Not to mention keeping that much shit in your mouth. Like, it's a lot coming out.
A lot at that very last part.
Yeah.
But great editing. I mean, the way, yes, you can tell it's a fake head at the end, but I mean, the way that it was edited together, I mean, again, Savini would have done it the same way, you know, that the effects in this movie were great.
When they finally get to the town of Dunwich, and then they're holed up in that house, I guess trying to figure out what the fuck's going on. And then the window busts, and it just starts raining maggots.
Yeah.
That's another thing where the actors had to have been like, well, it's a Fulci movie, fuck it, you know?
These are real, right? Yeah, they're real.
Yeah, I was about to say, they have to be. Just look at it. Like, I don't think there's any way to fake that good.
I think I did read somewhere in there where I believe it was a combination of some.
Yeah,
that was.
It's probably like, I don't know, fucking frosted flakes and a few like real maggots or something. I don't know. It was something, but there were some real ones in there.
Yeah, there were definitely real ones mixed in there.
But it's just like, there's a lot of that I see here. I don't know which came first, right? The chicken or the egg, time wise, and this and that. I see a lot of similarities with the Evil Dead here.
Yeah, because I think Evil Dead was a little bit. I know it came out you know how that movie was. I mean, it was low budget and it took a long time for them to probably get it completed.
Yeah.
And it started as Within the Woods, I think it was called, right? That they shopped around. So it was going around for a little while there.
This came out in 80, but didn't come out in the States until 83. So like, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, chicken or the egg, the timeline, I don't know how it matches up, but there has to be some, I can definitely tell you there's some Fulci influence with Sam Raimi. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, as far as this particular movie to that and everything, I'm just saying that there are some similarities. You can see it there and you can feel it there.
Yeah, with the occult angle of the movie.
Yeah, and the extreme gore and the way it's presented and everything is just very similar. Zombie Emily comes back. You know, she's kind of haunting them too. And that little boy, John, by the way, because that's his sister. So she's haunting the fuck out of him. She eventually comes back and she... John is with Sandra and then they get to her house or wherever they were going, like, we'll be safe here. And then she turns, it's almost like Zombie Emily just like taps her on the shoulder and then just fucking grabs a hold of the back of her head and pulls her brains out of the back of her head. Now it's not like a full on, like reach your hand in and pull it out kind of thing. It's more like crush the back of your head and your brains ooze between their fingers kind of kill. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, which again makes it that much kind of nastier. Like, you know, like Herschel Gordon Lewis, for instance, he would have just like, you know, had him bang the back of the head and then some oatmeal-y brains and stuff would have fallen out or whatever. But now Fulci goes in, bam, you know, squish, just oozing between the fingers, you know, brain matter and all that stuff. This makes it that much more nastier, I guess. Mm-hmm. Or if you were to believe that this could happen, somebody could grab the back of somebody's skull and squish it and pull the brains out the back of it. This is what would happen if that were able to happen.
All those dudes at the bar we've talked about a couple of times, by the way, they got wiped out. I don't think you fully see it happen on screen though, right? It didn't like, you know, some shit's going on there and then later on they kind of have a shot of them all dead out on the floor. So all those guys are gone.
Yeah.
And then Zombie Sandra, who just got killed by Zombie Emily with the brain thing, she comes up behind Peter and pulls his brains out. So it's like, you let me die this way, fuck you, and then she kills him the same way.
Yeah, I think there's three people that get their brains, at least three. Yeah, three people that get their brains pulled out in this movie.
Yeah, in almost the exact same manner.
Yeah. Well, first one, we didn't. Yeah, that was the other one. We didn't quite complete that scene either. That eye bleeding, gut puking, as she's puking her guts out, she grabs the back of McKelly Swovey as her person in that scene.
Yeah, you're right.
Grabs the back of his, rips his brains out.
Yeah. So we get three nice brain pulling incidents here throughout the movie. So you're getting your brain quota.
Yeah. Yeah. And this one, now that I think about it, there really wasn't any, I don't think there was any eyeball violence. There was plenty of zooming and symbolism, eyes and things like that, but there weren't. So what he made up for with lack of eyeball violence, made up for with the brain pulling.
Even when you're sitting there in the Bob drill scene, you're like, oh, he's going to catch it in the eyes. You know, when you finally realize it's about to happen, but no, they do the next thing. But yeah, that would have been the spot if he was going to do anything with the eyes. That would have been the spot right there with the drill, right?
Yeah. You know, that reminded me when we were talking about that scene, when you were saying, like, you know, the drill's coming towards him, you're like, oh, that's not going to happen. He's not going to do that.
Yeah.
Fulchip is going to do that. But that reminds me of a similar scene in a movie that we have done on this show. And it wouldn't have made sense for him to go through and do this for this movie, but you expect him to, and then there's a lack of that payoff, as in Trick or Treat, the heavy metal horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the press in that classroom, the sheet metal, or the metal shop classroom or whatever? They you know, get him in there, and then they turn his desk over, right? And that's when he's first having the power of Sammy Kerr kind of going through him or whatever, and he's chained something, or his necklace, something gets caught in this press machine, right? Because they were going to, like, didn't they put him on the press? And they had it close to his eyeball.
Yeah.
And the guy, then the machine pulled this guy's necklace or something into it, and then he almost died. Mm-hmm. But you know, he was the voice of Sammy Kerr egging him on to, like, let it go ahead and do it or whatever, but then he doesn't.
Yeah, but they stop short. Yeah.
And stop short of it. Well, Fulci doesn't stop short of it. He goes all the way on it. But
yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised that Fulci did it. It was more like when you're watching it, though, you expect. Because it takes so long for it to finally happen, you expect, all right, somebody's going to intervene, right? Like, somebody's going to say, like, the daughter's going to run in. Dad, don't do this. Whatever, right? Something's going to happen. But no, they're just like, they let it linger and linger and then bam, he's fucking drilling this dude through the head. You're like, holy shit, you know?
Yeah. And then, like I said, then it just keeps going. Like, any usual horror movie at the time, I mean, that wasn't going for as much gore would have just, like, you know, got up to the point where, and then you would have seen it go through the cheek like it did, and then you would just kind of, like, hear the rest of it, not see it.
Yeah,
but he cut made real sure quick. We described that entire scene, and he made sure you saw every
set piece. And you're going to sit here and stare at it for a little bit, before it, during it, and after it. but we come towards the end here where they're down in the tombs or something, because they're trying to find the tomb of the priest or whatever to stop this, and essentially they're too late. And they kind of get surrounded by a bunch of zombies, all the people that have either died before or during the movie are kind of appearing and surrounding them. And then Jerry grabs a cross and stabs the priest with it, which makes them all catch on fire. You know, all the dead, the priest and every one of them included, they all kind of catch fire. And then
that's right.
What's that?
Basically right through the crotch. Stabs him right through the crotch with it.
Yeah. And they all catch fire, and that's, you know, you're pretty much, that's the end of it. And they actually, there's another cool part where that, how they get out of the tomb, they come out of, like, one of those raised graves, you know, like the raised coffin thing. They come out of it from the ground, and, you know, everything's all right. And John comes running across the lawn there, the cemetery, yelling her name or whatever. And then it just freeze frame. They're like, no, freeze frame. And then the screen cracks, like, credits. So what the fuck happened there? That's the only part that was just like, okay, what?
True. Yeah, that up to that point, you know, like, you can go with the plot the way it is, you know, this is Italians and this is how they do it, they're more visual. But yeah, the ending is purely for the, I guess, for the visual of, like, hey, we're gonna have him, like, running into, I don't know why, but he's gonna run towards the screen. I'm gonna have the screen animated, you know, cracking or whatever.
Yeah, he's just like, hey, you survived. I forgot her name, right? Mary? Yeah, it was Mary. And and Jerry. How could I forget? It was Mary and Jerry at the end. They're the survivors. And he's like, Mary, Mary. And then it just freeze frame as they're screaming. Now, here's the thing. Why are they screaming, no? Like, because there was... Yeah, you don't see anything happen. Like, is he in danger? I don't know. I guess so. The screen fucking cracked. I don't know. It was just a weird, weird way to end it. It's almost like a bad SNL skit where they don't know how to end it. You know, just like,
yeah,
just fucking dance off, you know?
Maybe it was. I guess they wanted to have, I don't know who, like I said, I don't know if it was Sacchetti's writing, if it was Fulci wanting it, or who wanted it to end like that. But I guess they just maybe thought, well, we can't just have him come up out of the tomb, boom, everything's good, and that's it. You know, that's what you would think would happen. I mean, unless you got some real twist. I don't know what the twist would be, but they thought they needed a twist. I don't know.
I think a better twist would have been like
them coming up out of the tomb, and that was it.
I think a better ending or better twist would have been like the same thing, right? They come out of the tomb, John's running toward them, and they're like, no, and then he turned around and the priest is standing right behind him. Like, all that shit they just did didn't really happen, you know, supernatural fuckery, you know, oh, fuck, and then credits. That would have been better than just freeze frame, crack the screen. Does that mean the end of the world just happened? I guess. Fuck, I don't know. But that's the Italian horror for you.
Yep. I mean, and well, The Beyond, like I said, you've seen The Beyond, right?
So that's even
that one. I thought, well, again, we're not giving away.
Yeah.
We're not going to spoil other endings of other movies, but let's just say I really enjoyed the way that was a bit more satisfying, even though it's still, again, a very Italian visual style ending that from a movie that didn't have a plot was, you know, kind of all over the place or whatever. But the ending really tied it together, I thought.
No. Well, we'll get to it. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that day when that comes. We'll get to it. And I'm especially hoping that Donnie and or Will be there for that one, because they're going to, if they think there's some what the fuck going on with this one. I remember that one being even more so. But there we have it. That's The Gates of Hell, a.k.a. The City of the Living Dead, whatever you call it. Fear of the City of the Living, whatever the fuck the other title was. There's tons of titles for this. There we go. So, you know, needless to say, I think we all enjoyed it. You know, we've gushed about it quite a bit here, a little longer than usual, frankly. Tiana, we'll let you go first. What's your final thoughts and your rating for City of the Living Dead?
Oh, this is one of my favorites since I got introduced to it.
Yeah. Thanks, Smoke.
It was probably the last, it was the last one I saw in the trilogy, I think, right?
Last one you saw? Oh, yeah, because you'd already seen The Beyond and House by the Cemetery
Not that it matters to watch these in order, but yeah.
Yeah, not
that it matters. Not that it matters, but But this one's probably, I mean, I like The Beyond too, but this one's up there because of those kills. And the cinematography is always excellent. And the characters too, because they all come from other Italian movies that I know, so that makes it more enjoyable for me. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to give this one a 5.
5 stars. I think, is that your first? I believe. Let me see. No, you gave Hereditary 5 stars.
Yeah.
So far since you've been on, yes, 5 stars. But hey, who am I to argue? Smoke, what do you say?
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. I don't know. I've already said all I can pretty much say about this movie, I think, but as far as like gushing over it, right?
Yeah.
Gushing over it like a Fulci eye wound or something.
Yeah. Why don't you just get a room?
But yeah, and I saw it, I don't know how many times, but I'm talking about the order you've seen them in, and not that it matters. I think of these three, it took me the longest to see The Beyond because that movie was released as 7 Doors of Death on VHS here. It wasn't released as The Beyond back in VHS renting days and stuff. And that 7 Doors of Death was cut up and it had a different score and all this stuff. So, although, for whatever reason, I was able to find all kinds of other crazy horror movies, but 7 Doors of Death, none of the video stores in this area ever had. So I had to wait till tape, the gray market, you know, tape trading era.
Mm.
For me, I discovered that, which was about 1989 or 90, somewhere in there. So I didn't see The Beyond until 90 or 91, somewhere in that range. So I think I saw The Gates of Hell first and watched the shit out of it. And then came to House by the Cemetery, then The Beyond, like I said, later on. So not that that matters, but that just happened to be my order of watching that. But yeah, Gates of Hell, I have watched it many, many times and never get tired of it. It's just, it's prime Fulci. If you're into the, you know, there's different Fulci fans. Sometimes there's those that maybe prefer as giallos or those that prefer as splatter movies. I love all of it, including the action and the Western ones that I talked about earlier. But I have a special affinity for these 80s splatter ones because those are the ones I saw first of his and the ones that I watched the most of then and now probably. So I don't think I could go any lower than a 5 on this one as well for myself. Because, I mean, yes, I like The Beyond, maybe edges this one out a little bit more for me. But, I mean, I can't go I have to go with a 5-1. I can't go any less than that. And, you know, based on my love of Fulci in this movie and and Italian splatter and all that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, myself, again, I'm essentially going to say the same things, but I'm going to give it 4.5. And the only reason I say that is just a little bit of wiggle room for some other ones. There's a couple others, you know, that I won't mention that I like more from Fulci, you know, if I'm comparing his other film. There's a couple others I like a little more. So I think just to give myself a little wiggle room on those, I'm going to go 4.5. But man, I mean, it's an awesome movie. There are certain aspects of it, like we just explained, like the end, that's just like, what the fuck, you know? But I think that kind of adds to what makes these movies fun, you know, is that you do get that kind of, you know, what the fuck are you going on, for lack of a better term. And, you know, if nothing else, it makes you talk about it, you know, like we have. And I mean, it's top notch gore, a couple of these great kills. And we'll go into that a little bit more here in just a second, but it's just good stuff altogether. It's the cinematography is great. You know, the look of it is awesome. You know, the story it's about as cohesive a story as you'll see in a lot of these movies. You know, it makes more sense than a lot of these movies do. I'll say that. It's a little easier to follow, although it is a lot of weird stuff in it, but it's a little easier to follow. So yeah, I enjoy the hell out of it. And I'm not going to argue with anybody who wants to give it 5 stars, but just to put it in this proper perspective for Fulci, period, for me, I'm going to go a little lower. So that brings us currently to 4.8 out of 5 stars. So obviously we highly, highly recommend it. If you're into Fulci, you've probably already seen it, but if you haven't seen this one, go check it out. But we're not going to completely leave it there just yet. Now, Donnie's not here to give his connections from the crypt, but we do have Tiana. All right, so what kind of numbers were you able to dig up for this, Tiana?
This one had 42.
Almost surprised it's not any higher.
27 zombies and 15 humans.
Yeah, it sounds about right. Because it's not like wall to... I mean, like, you get plenty of gore and there's a lot of deaths and everything, but it's not like wall to wall, you know, body slinging everywhere, kind of, you know. But yeah, you get plenty. There's no doubt about that. That naturally leads us to... Let's talk about the kill reel.
I like kill.
And boy, you could go about 1,000 different directions on this one, huh? I think I'm gonna go with old Bob.
Yeah.
Catching it with the drill. I mean, you can make an argument for a few others, no question. You know, 3 different people getting their brains pulled out, the girl vomiting her guts up, tons of stuff that, you know, I'm sure, you know, Smoke will bring up in the gore score here in just a second, but I think if there's one that's like, holy shit, it's that drill. Bob getting the drill that, you know, I'm going to take away from this movie more than just about any one particular kill. But that's my opinion. But Smoke, that leads to you.
Yeah.
Gore score.
Oh, yeah, this is definitely a juicy one that we've already talked about throughout the entire podcast episode. Oh, yeah, before I get to that, I was mentioning before is that when me and Tiana were watching this movie, we both said to ourselves, like, well, Josh is going to have a hard time picking a kill.
Yeah. Yeah, this is one of those good luck fucker kind of movies.
But yeah, that Bob kill, that was amazing. And that definitely adds into that really ups the ante in the gore score, as does the gut puking woman who, well, Fulci will do 3 different gore scenes in one for that girl. I mean, well, the eye bleeding, I don't know if you call it a gore scene. It kind of is. I mean, it's bloody, right? But starts off with the blood dripping from the eyes. Then you get gut puking. And then the girl rips her boyfriend's, you know, Michele Svovi, brains out, right, in the car. So all of that happens in the span of a couple minutes here. Yeah, and you got Bob with the drill pressed, and, you know, through the head. And plenty of other, at least 2 other brain ripping scenes. Juicy zombie makeup, I think, on the supernatural zombies or whatever, like the one that's the sister, like, that keeps popping up, and she's got her, you know, a lot of people have said that the Italian zombies are like oatmeal zombies, and then it very well might be that they just apply, you know, oatmeal or whatever, and then a lot of fake blood and stuff, because they really get their faces for their zombies, whether they are in the movie, like zombie, like the post-apocalyptic ones we talked about, or like Burial Ground or whatever, or whether they're Fulci's supernatural zombies in these three Gates of Hell movies, or the Gates of Hell trilogy, whatever. They're always interesting looking to me and different than American zombies.
No doubt.
Yeah, there's something Italian about their zombies that when you see them, you know that it's an Italian horror movie. Even if you just see a scene from something, you say, you know, with a bunch of other if I were to see a bunch of zombie movies edited together with different zombies, I could pick out which ones were the Italian ones, even if I'd never seen that particular Italian zombie film before. Yeah. That's just how kind of, you know, they or how they make their zombies or whatever. And so the same that applies to the dead that we see in this movie, the ones that come back from that funeral home or whatever, right, that show up in different places. So they're pretty juicy zombie makeups. And you got zombie priest who hangs himself earlier too, right, in the movie. Then you get him getting his crotch stabbed with a big, huge wooden stake.
And everybody catching on fire.
And then catching fire. But he gets stabbed through, and he pulls it out, and you see through him. You see through his torso, the hole.
Yeah,
you know?
I forgot about that. Yeah,
it's cool. And then, there's plenty of gore in this one. And I usually defer to Chaz Balin's Deep Red Horror Handbook for the gore score on these types of movies that came out in the '80s. Chaz Fulci was one of his favorites as a director. I think he was his favorite Italian director. And for me too, I could say that. While I acknowledge that Argento might have the more technical prowess when it comes to putting together a movie and whatnot in a scene and cinematography, things like that, people that watch a lot of Italian horror movies are going to have, they're going to have a fave, one or the other. They're going to like, who are you? Are you an Argento guy or are you a Fulci guy? For me, it's Fulci straight. Just, I love Argento. Don't get me wrong. But something about Fulci, it's just that I saw more of his back then and it has gravitated towards that, the splatter aspect of it, even though, you know, of course, Argento's got plenty of violent movies. So. But it just hit me at the right time in the 80s. So, I'm going to go with Chaz, the same score that he gave it, and that's a 10, the gore score. Yeah, I mean, it's well-deserved.
And that's the first 10 you've handed out since all the way back in episode 177 when we saw Mandy. So if you've seen that one, then you know... You know what, you know, the blood level you're playing with here, the gore level, right? High level stuff here for sure. But like we said, I mean, we highly recommend it. And if you haven't seen it, go check it out, please. And I know we've spoiled it, but we haven't really spoiled it. You need to see it for yourself. So go check out City of the Living Dead as fast as you can and come report back to us and let us know how much you loved it, because I'm sure you will if you enjoy our podcast. Next week, we are going to be heading back to the Cult Corner series, and that's where we basically watch some of our favorite movies that aren't horror movies. And we all nominate something, and we put it on a wheel, and we spin it, and whatever it lands on, that's what we're watching. And it just so happened to be a movie that I nominated. So back-to-back, you know, I nominated City of the Living Dead. Now I nominated Highlander, and it won the spin. So we're going to be talking about Highlander from 1986. Next week. I'm really looking forward to that. That was one that I watched a number of times growing up. So I'm sure we'll get some similar stories from everybody around the table when we talk about that next week. So I guess that's pretty much it. We've talked more than enough here, a little bit more than usual here for City of the Living Dead. So for Will and Donnie, who unfortunately couldn't be with us, Tiana, Professor Smoke, I'm Josh. We are the All American Spook Show, and we'll talk to you next week for Highlander.
As you leave the theater, folks, please be careful. Don't let this happen to your car. Be sure to remove the speaker before you leave. If you should accidentally pull a speaker loose, please turn it in at our snack bar or box office. Thank you.